All right. So, does anyone object to me starting early?
Do it.
Okay. Okay. So, the title of my talk is ASP.NET MVC3, @, the time is now. And if anyone here knows why that's @? Okay. So, the time is now for my talk. My name's Phil Hack. I'm a senior program manager at Microsoft, and that's my email address. So if you have questions after this talk, you can come talk to me. You can send me an email. Although in general, my favorite way for people to ask me questions about ASP.NET MVC3 is to go here. And why does that look so bad? You guys change the design, Jared? Or Dalgus? Or is that another IE9-ism? Let's try this out. Ooh. Wait. Oh. So this is stackoverflow.com on IE9, and this is on Chrome. Let's hit Control F5. Maybe they just pushed an update. No. Your stuff is broken. So we met with these guys earlier, and they were telling us that they deploy every 5 minutes or, no, 3 times a day. And see what happens. <I'm just kidding. laughs> But in any case, my point is, this is one of my favorite ways for people to ask me questions is actually to post it here and then go ahead and email me the URL. And the reason why is that there's so many smart people who are monitoring this site, and I'm only one person. And usually members of my team will have better answers than I will. But I'm happy to follow up on questions that people email me. And if you email Scott Goo, he's just going to forward it to me, so you can bypass him and just email me directly. So, just thought I'd mention that. See, what I like about starting early is I don't have to feel too rushed yet. Okay. Oh, and then that URL is my blog, so I often write about a lot of these things that I'm going to tell you about. There's some things that I wanted to show today that I can't, but I'll blog about them hopefully soon. And then, you know, just keep looking. Checking back there, and you'll see some cool stuff. So is the volume okay? It feels really loud to me, but maybe it's because I'm up here. Okay, good. So last year at Mix, I left off with this slide. This was my last slide last year at Mix. You know, I talked about all the cool stuff that we had in ASP.NET MVC2, and I said that the excitement's going to continue on the road to MVC3. And 1 year later, here I am. I'm at the end of that road. And one of the things you often hear people say is that Microsoft doesn't get a product right until version 3. Now, I have a little bit of conceit, and I like to think that we did pretty good in 1 and 2, but I think they're right. Number 3 is the one we're really excited about. In fact, we're so excited about version 3, we love version 3 so much at Microsoft that we decided to do it twice. So with ASP.NET MVC3, we had a release back in January. Our RTM release of ASP.NET MVC3, you may have seen us blog about it, had a lot of new improvements to the runtime, including things like Razor, which was one of the big features that we added. And then, you know, my boss's boss said, hey, let's do it again for Mix. I said, oh, okay. So we have a release at Mix that Scott Guthrie announced in his keynote, and you may have seen him demo it. How many of you were at Scott Hanselman's talk earlier today? Okay, was anyone here not at his talk? Okay, oh, okay, a few of you, good. Because I didn't want to do a whole rehash of his talk. One of the important things to note about this release that we just did a couple days ago is that there are no runtime changes. So if you have a website deployed on ASP.NET MVC3 RTM that we released in January, you don't have to go to the server and deploy a new DLL. There's no changes to system.web.mvc. And just to kind of prove that to you, this is what your add remove programs or your program and features dialog looks like after you install ASP.NET MVC3 RTM. And then this is what it looks like after you install the tools update. And you notice there that the only thing that changed is we add the word update. And that's pretty much it. No, well, besides the tooling itself. But you notice the first entry did not change at all. In fact, if you had it installed, we don't even run that MSI. So the run, you know, just to keep in mind, you don't have to go update your servers. The runtime has not changed at all. All right, well, that's it for my slides. So I want to switch to some demos. But before I go to do that, I do need to ask you a few questions. Is there anyone in here, and don't be shy, raise your hand, anyone in here never has not done any ASP.NET MVC development? Okay, there's a few of you. Has anyone here done ASP.NET development, MVC development, but not on version 3? So one or two only. Okay, good, good. Has anyone here deployed an MVC 3 application? Okay, quite a few of you. Good, good. So in this talk, I will go, I will show some introductory things, but I will go very quickly into some advanced concepts as well. But I'm finding that asking these questions is really kind of awkward because I can't count that fast. So I thought what would make a lot of sense is if we built an application that you guys could go to and fill out your answers online. So what I'm going to build is a survey application from scratch using MVC 3, and we'll see how see whether I can do it in 1 hour. Or actually less than an hour now. But as I go through building this application, I'm going to take a stop here and there. You know, it's kind of like taking a tour. We'll look at the, you know, monkeys in the trees and the zebras on the side. But in this case, we'll look at various features of MVC 3 as we go along. And one of the things to note here with MVC 3, let me zoom in a little bit. You can see here that with MVC 2, we had two different project templates. With 3, we just have one, because what we did is we decided to consolidate those into a new dialog here. So this is what I call the file new dialog, or the new project dialog for MVC 3. And in MVC 3 RTM, we have these two entries in here, empty and internet application. But you can see here that with the tools update that we just shipped, we also now include an intranet application. And the idea there is that this one uses Windows authentication or Active Directory authentication by default. And there's a README file in the project template that'll tell you, that'll guide you to making sure it works in your actual corporate network. Because there are certain things that we cannot do within a project template for an intranet app. But if you run that, you know, in the login, there won't be an account controller. Instead, it just uses your NTFS authentication, or not your NTFS, your Windows authentication, and you'll see like your login name. So I see Redmond/Philhoff. The other thing we have in here, oh, and you'll hear me say this a lot, you can put stuff in there. And I'll have a blog post hopefully by the end of this week where I'll show you how to get your own project templates in there. Because one of the things I do a lot is I'll say, oh, you can put stuff in there, but I'm not going to tell you how. But this time around, I promise I'll tell you how to get something in there. And that's pretty useful because if you have certain types of applications that you write often, then you know you can copy one of the existing project templates, muck around in it, and then set up the right registry settings. And then next time you create a project, you'll be able to choose it. Likewise, this View Engine dropdown, you can see we have two choices, Razor and ASPX, and we choose Razor by default. In fact, you know, someday I don't think anyone will choose ASPX in the future. You can also extend that dialog. You can put Spark or Enhamel or whatever View Engine that you like. Again, I'm not going to tell you how to do it. But no, there are blog posts out there for how to do that. So with everything we do with the ASP.MVC 3, we have this kind of mantra, this idea that we want to play nice with others. We want to make our boxes extensible so that people can put their own preferences in there and not do what we tell them to do. But we're also moving towards this idea that, well, but out of the box, someone new to our platform who has no idea what choices to make can get started. So we're going to put defaults in there, but everything's extensible. So you'll see that as a theme often. We also have this new thing, use HTML5 and semantic markup. So project templates now can query this value and they can adjust their markup based on whether you check that box or not. And so by default, we obviously have HTML5 versions of each of our templates. Well, they're all the same template, but they just respond to that. And all that does is when you check that box, we will include the modernizer script. So you probably saw Scott Guthrie talk about that. And that'll make sure that it still looks good in IE6 or IE7 or whatever other down-level browsers. And it also uses HTML5 markup elements such as navigation, header, footer, and so on. So make sure I check internet application. Excuse me. All right. So one of the things you might have noticed is that that thing spun a little bit after I created this project. So if I select Add Library Package References and run NuGet and check Updates, we can see that I already have updates available. That's because jQuery ships monthly, and there's no way that we can keep up with jQuery with their project templates, because MVC, more or less, ships yearly. But what we realize with this release is that if we put these things, rather than just putting script files in your project, if we install them as NuGet packages, we may not be able to keep up, but you can. You just go right here, go in here, click updates, and when a new version's available, you can just click this handy-dandy update button, and it'll update your scripts. I'll go ahead and do that. So now I'm up on jQuery 1.5.2. So one little caveat with that is I just realized I haven't tested anything with that version, but I'm sure it'll be fine, is that we can't go in and start mucking around with your source code. I don't think you trust us to do that, so we won't update that jQuery reference for you. So you will have to do that, and you know, maybe in the future we'll look at ways where we can even solve that. The good news is that the jQuery validation doesn't change its file name, so even when you upgrade, your references are okay. Besides, you probably should be referencing those from the CDN anyways. But by default, you're there. Okay, so we're going to build a survey. And a survey has, you know, questions. We'll do multiple choice, so questions, answer choices, and so on. But in the initial survey page, we're going to need to list a set of questions and some choices. And when we post those question answers to an action method, we're going to want to know the answer to that question as part of that posting, right? But when you think of the data model for a survey, a question table wouldn't have an answer ID. And the reason why is that, you know, that means that only one person gets to answer that question and everyone is out of luck. So what we're going to do here is we're going to create a view model for this initial one. And this is really just a setup so that I can show you Razor. Question view model. So we'll create an ID. And you guys all know the shortcut, hit prop, tab, tab. And that's what we call it now. We don't call them properties. We just say, oh, just hit prop, tab, tab, prop, tab, tab. So answer choice ID. Okay, somehow I typed this slash character up there. So you notice here, this is just a simple object. This is going to be the model that we're going to use within, that I'm going to use to display the survey. So my home controller, I'm going to spit out some questions and then display those questions. So for those who are new to MVC, this is kind of the heart of MVC, an action method. We'll go query some model, whether it's the database or whether you're just newing up objects, and then it's going to send that model to the view, and the view is going to render it. So I'm going to repurpose the index view at home for this, and then we'll go ahead and right-click within the action method and click Add View and bring up the Add View dialog. And you'll notice a couple changes in this Add View dialog if you've seen it before. One, we have View Engine Selection. This is for those who haven't seen MVC 3 yet. We have View Selection here. A view engine selection, so you can choose Razor. And go ahead and choose strongly typed, did I compile yet? Let me just make sure I did that. That's something that we hope to fix in the next version, so you don't even need to compile in order to see the, did I hear applause for that? Yeah. So one of the things you'll notice here is that we improved this model class dropdown. In a moment of complete brain deadness, we originally made this sorted. What we put in that box used to be the full namespace type name, so it would be like myapplication.models.foo. So that meant if you had a class named foo and you wanted to find it, you'd have to type your entire namespace.foo. But now we realize, you know, if we just sorted them by, you know, we started thinking of all these different things we could do. Oh, we'll just build into IntelliSense right into there. And we just realized, you know, if we just sort the thing by the actual class name and put the namespace after, people can actually find their classes really easy. Just type the first few letters, hit down arrow, and there it is. So that's kind of nice. All right. And if you're wondering, I will get a little more advanced here in a moment, so don't worry about it. Okay. So here we are. This is Razor. It looks pretty complicated, right? So one of the cool benefits here is if you're familiar with old MVC, we had this less than percent at page inherits equals system.web.webviewpages.of type model. And like, I don't even know if I got that right. It's so complicated. But now when you have a model, you can just do the at model declaration, and we'll put that into the class. In this case, I'm going to use an I list of question view model. because I want to show a list of questions. And the only reason I didn't generate a list template from the AdView dialog is because I want to show you Razor, and I'm going to write this by hand to show you kind of some of the coolness of Razor. So I'll just start typing this out for each var. What am I dealing with? Question in model, because our model is a list. Let's start there. So if you've ever seen other Vue engine markups, like PHP or ASPX or ERB even, take a look at this, let it sink in a little bit, and you realize that there's something interesting going on right here. There is a minimum syntax here for transitioning from code to markup. You notice that I start that at for each, and then I go all the way to the curly brace, and then I didn't have to put some ampersand percent beasting thing here, right? I just ended it and started writing markup here. Now, let's just make sure that this works, right? Maybe you're thinking, oh, that doesn't work. So here we see that we see that it actually renders some markup. Sometimes when I show people this, they're trying to intuit. What are the rules of Razor? How's this working? Oh, I bet at sign means go code to the end of the line. And I say, well, no. We'll see that works. Yep. See that? It still works. Okay. What happens is that what we realize is we had this insight. When people are writing views, they tend to write these if blocks or for loops and stuff, and they right after the initial block statement, they go right to markup, right? Ideally, that's the way you're writing these views. You're not writing giant chunks of code intermixed with your markup too much. You're writing nice, clean, light markup. And we realized Razor could not only help you do that, but it could take advantage of that knowledge. For example, this close brace here, I didn't need to do the at sign there because we understand the block-like nature of semantic HTML or XHTML markup. Because I closed that li tag, we know that that HTML block end, and we know that the next character is code, unless I put in markup, right? If I do that, then we're back in markup mode. So there's a lot of coolness there with the Razor. So the other thing that people wonder about is, okay, so you have this expression, at question, that question text, and you know that that whole thing is a C# expression. What if I say this is the, and then I put a punctuation there? And you can see there that Visual Studio IntelliSense is really like a overeager dog. I can help you. But I'm going to hit escape here and hit save. And we'll see that we handle that just fine. So you notice here that we have this extra punctuation there. Yeah, I picked the great questions for that. But we realize that we take a look at the next character and we realize, well, that's not an identifier, so that can't possibly be what the user meant. But let's say for some reason you like to suffix everything with A. So maybe you're from, Australia or something. So that, you notice there, Visual Studio is telling us, oh, that doesn't look good. There's a squiggly there, right? So what happens there is we're going to get our the Scott Goo yellow screen of death. Yeah, if you hadn't heard, oh, I should put context. So Scott Goo was doing the Channel 9 interview, and someone asked him, is there any code of yours that's still in ASP.NET? And he said he wrote the original prototypes for ASP.NET, but he's pretty sure none of his code is in there, except for maybe that he designed the yellow screen of death. So one of the things with Razor is anytime you get into a situation that's ambiguous, Razor's really, really smart, but there are these situations where you could mean one thing or another. You can always get out of it by being explicit, by using parentheses. So you saw there that Visual Studio actually highlighted those parentheses to let you know that whatever's inside the parentheses is now the expression. And when I refresh this page, we can see that A shows up. It's cool. The other thing we have here, let me just create more room. What if you're typing an email address? You notice there that at sign didn't get highlighted. So we put little smarts in there so that if you use the at sign, or if you use something that looks like roughly like an email address, we'll say, oh, that's probably an email address. They didn't mean to do that. But perhaps you actually did mean to do that, right? So maybe you're doing something like class equals at question underscore or ID underscore at question dot ID, something like that. I'll actually put this out of the element. This is a common case where I'll do a CSS class like that. And I'll just put this here just so you can see what happens. And there you can see that we can actually see the at sign there, right? So right now, Razor thinks that has the rough shape of an email address. So, you know, we think it's an email address. Well, once again, as in all cases, anytime there's ambiguity, you can use parentheses to get rid of the ambiguity. So you can see that that's working there. Cool. So a lot of people I show Razor to, initially they look at it and they're like, you know, it's cute. Yeah, it's nice. But it just means you're saving a few keystrokes. And it's like, well, I don't know about you, but my wrists hurt when I type a lot. So that's actually a pretty big deal. But is there anything more to Razor? Anything that takes it beyond just being a nice view syntax? And one of the nice things about Razor is that we wrote it ground up to be componentizable, meaning that you can run it outside of ASP.NET. So you can use it as a templating engine outside of ASP.NET. And it's extremely extensible, which is really cool. And one of the other cool things we did is we created the ability to have a Razor snippet be a func or a delegate. And this is one of the coolest things. I usually call it Razor view. Razor inline templates. So we have, it's basically based off this pattern. So if you have a func of any type, comma, helper result. So for this example, I'll just choose dynamic because it's easy. Someone getting a phone call? And let's see, href equals at. An item is kind of this magic word, so it has to be at item. Item.href, comma, and at item.link text. So if you see what I'm doing there, I'm defining a func of dynamic. Dynamic would be the input. Helper result is the output. And I define this variable, and I just assigned a snippet of Razor to it. And now I can go in here, and I can call that template here. So let's say I just put it in a span here. At template new, we'll just do an anonymous object here. If I can type href equals, and now when I run this, we can see that I can actually pass that template around, and I can start calling into it, passing it parameters, and it actually renders it. So that alone, it kind of blew my mind when I first saw it. I didn't realize we got it into version 1. But where it really starts to be really cool is when you start thinking about what you can do with it. So you're saying that Razor will actually convert a snippet of Razor into that fits that profile into a func of something helper result. Well, can I have any method just take in a func of something helper result and pass Razor into it? Yeah, I sure can. In fact, let's do that. So what I'm going to do here is add a class, and we'll write a helper method. And I'm going to call this a helper, because I'm so creative with my naming. Static. And what I want to do is, there's a lot of times where you're iterating a bunch of items, right, within a view, and you kind of want to use the for each syntax, but you also want to know what the index is, and you can't have them both. Well, now you can, so I'll show you how. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to write a method called public static func of t item. This will be like the individual item. Oh, shoot. I'm using a plugin that like removes all your namespaces when you hit save, so I got to stop hitting save. I got to disable that. Okay, func of t item, comma, helper result. And we'll import that namespace, so control dot. Static func of. Sorry, the method takes in a helper result, and we'll call it each. And we'll make it an extension method on anything that's I enumerable of T item. So we've got to make this T item. Let me just move this parameter to here. And that's it. Public static helper result each T item parentheses. Okay. Oh, we need an argument name, right? And we'll call it template. But I was thinking that what I really need is not T item. What I want is some indexed item. So I'm going to create a class, another class that will represent an item, item and its index. So it's a really simple class. I think we'll call it indexed item. So I'm just going to snippet that so that we don't have to watch me type all this stuff. But you can see here, it's a real simple class, two properties, the index and then the item. Pretty straightforward. And we'll use that over here. So func of indexed item of t item. And then let me just return null for now. Make sure. Yeah. So public static helper result, t each t item parent. Oh, I didn't give it a param name, did I? Okay. And I need, yep. And another one of these. Sorry, I can't hear you. Thank you. Func of index item of t item. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. There we go. Sorry, I'm having trouble typing. So why don't we just write this again, if you don't mind. So how about this? Let's see. Can I write a method that doesn't take any parameters? Good. There we go. All right. Woo! Yeah, you can write a parameterless method. Okay, this IEnumerable of T item items. Oh, this is the problem. I didn't import this namespace. Okay. Now we got that. See what happens when you try. That's the one thing about our func, our generic syntax, is you start to get all these. Scott Hanselman compares it to like regular expressions, right? You just start to trying to figure out, like, you know, here's my regular expression. Did I get enough closing parentheses? It's like, oh, yeah, I just got to delete that one. So we'll get this right. With your help, we're going to get this right, and I really appreciate it. Okay, so that's the extension method. So any enumeration will now have this method. Now we just need to pass in the func of t item, comma, helper result, which we'll call the template. And that still we got to import this namespace. And now we can call this indexed item t item. Yay! Okay. Good, we're back on track. Glad I started early. Okay. So what this is going to do is this is going to iterate over every item, and then it's going to return a helper result. So this part is a little funky, but I'll walk you through it. So what we're going to do is we're going to return a new helper result. And helper result is really cool. What it is it's a way for you to write directly to response.write in effect, but have it delayed to when it needs to get called. So if you've ever had like helper methods that wrote to response.write, we've always told you that's the wrong way to do it. But then if you're writing something that returns a lot of strings, there's always that thing in the back of your mind saying, well, that can't be very performant. If that string gets too big, it gets thrown into large object heap, and then it's never going to get collected, and I'm going to kill the perf of my machine, and I'll never grow as big as Stack Overflow. But with helper result, you can. And the way what it takes in is a action of TextWriter. And so what's happening is when it calls your method, it's going to give you the TextWriter. And that writer is basically response.output effectively. And I'd be maybe glossing over some details. So we're going to get a result, and then we're going to pass it a lambda expression. And so in here, we can do our whole int I equals 0, I less than items.count, import using system.link. So we get those really cool extension methods. And then I++. Yay, I can write a for loop. Okay, I'm getting better. And then what we need to do is we're going to call this template. And remember that template is just a lambda, and we're going to pass in the current item. But rather than passing in the current item, we're going to create one of these cool new indexed items. So new indexed item of t item, cool. And then we'll pass the current index and the current item, which is going to be items.element at I. And OK, And then we're going to call write to. So we're calling this template, which normally the template itself would write to the writer, but we're going to tell it to write to the current writer instead. And that, oh, sorry, this should have been called writer. Okay, that compiles. So let me Alt-Shift-Enter, oops. So you can see all the code. Okay, so I'll just leave that up there for a second. Is anyone kind of confused by this code at all? If so, I can explain it after too. So it's pretty straightforward. This method iterates through a bunch of stuff, writes all this stuff to this writer, and then passes this helper result. So nothing gets executed when you call this method initially until Razor calls it. But now that we have this, and copy this namespace in here, and go back to my index.cshtml, import that namespace, and we can change this to @model.each, and I can pass in a lambda expression, which is cool. So li @item dot, and check that out. We get IntelliSense in there. So item dot index. So this is item index of model dot count minus one. Gotta tell that the whole thing is an expression named at item dot item dot question text. So, and then close that parens. So here we have a method here, a helper method that I just wrote in front of you, and I'm passing in Razor syntax into that method. And now when I run this, we can see that list gets, this is item 0 of 1, this is item 1 of 1, named result. So hopefully I've convinced you that that is way cooler than what we had before in terms of ASPX models. So that's a bit about Razor. And it's one of the new features of ASP.NET MVC 3. So if you're on MVC 2 and thinking of upgrading, this is one good reason. And there are people out there who are writing. We don't have a tool to automatically upconvert, but there are people who are writing those tools for you. Cool. So let's switch gears a little bit. So I've shown you how to build like an arbitrary view model and start, you know, building out a view. But let's go into the data model, the objects that we're going to need, right? So most applications require a database. So what I'm going to do is I want to use an in-proc database, something that's xcopy deployable. So I'll go to NuGet, as I often do, and I'm going to install a package called entityFramework.SQLServerCompact. And what's cool about this package here, let me just bump that up. Whoa. That package pulled in several other packages, and tomorrow morning at 10:30, I know you'll be a little bit worn out from the attendee party, but if you can make it at 10:30 tomorrow, I have a talk with Scott Hanselman on NuGet, so we'll show a lot of cool stuff on NuGet. This is just a little taste of it. So you notice this brought in several packages, and what it's done is it's set up my application to use Entity Framework Code First with SQL Server Compact. And in fact, Entity Framework is already installed. You notice that's one of the features of MVC 3 tools update is that we pre-install Entity Framework into your project so it's there. And the reason why we do that is because we have this new scaffolding feature. So what I'll do here is I'll add First I'll need to add some classes here. And we're going to model our application now and start thinking about what is a question look like in the database. I better start moving a little faster. So typically we're going to need an ID. We're going to need question text. And it kind of looks similar to the view model, right? So virtual I collection of answer choice. Whoops. So notice here that this is just a class that you might write without any data access technology, right? I just wrote a plain old CLR object, or what we call POCA object. And it's one of the beauties of working with Entity Framework Code First is that I can actually focus on my domain model. I can focus on the object model that I want. And then when I run it, it will just automatically map that to a database following a set of conventions, which I also have control over through attributes. So we'll go to answer choice. So just to take a quick look, so obviously I need a primary key, so that's ID. I need the text of the question. And since we're going to do multiple choice, I said, well, I have a virtual collection of answer choices. So we need to generate the answer choice class. And the reason why I made this virtual, this is important. That's for code first, because when I get a set of questions and then I call in to get all the answer choices, it can use lazy loading by generating a dynamic proxy behind the scenes. So I don't generally have to know about it, but I do need to know to make it virtual. Otherwise, it can't rewrite that property and do lazy loading. If I always do non-lazy loading, then I don't think I need to have it virtual. I don't think I do, but I'm not the EF code first expert. OK, we'll go to answer choice, make that public. I'm not going to make you sit through me typing all of these out. But I will just briefly notice that this is pretty straightforward, right? We have let's hide this guy. Primary key again, the text of the answer choice. And an answer choice has a collection of answers. So the answers would be every answer that anyone made for this particular choice. So all the people who chose this particular multiple choice option. And then we also have a foreign key or a reference back to the parent question. So it's a one-to-many relationship between question and the answer choices. And so we've got the answer here. So this is our last object. And we'll generate the answer. And the answer class is really, really simple. It's just the primary key and the choice that it's the answer for. So we now have our object model. We're done with that. We need to populate the database with some data. So let's scaffold this out by going to this new feature called new feature of add controller. So when I go to add controller, you notice that this dialog has changed quite a bit. So I can call this, I like to use plural names, so I'll call this questions controller. You notice here that we have some options here. And there are more options than I expected. I must have... Oh, okay. So by default, there are three options in here. Empty, controller with read-write action, and controller with empty read-write actions. But if you were here for a talk that Steve Sanderson did just before mine, you can add new options into there using NuGet. So if you install MVC scaffolding, it actually adds new scaffolders in there. Now, by default, we include Entity Framework. But if you're an Inhibernate user, or Massive user, Subsonic user, Dapper user, whatever it is you use, you can write your own templates, put them in there using MVC scaffolding, and they'll show up in this dialog. So it kind of goes back to that theme I mentioned earlier. If there's a dropdown, you can probably put something in there. In this case, I'm going to choose one of the default ones. And we'll choose a question here. Nope, question. Ah, once again. Did I not build? Okay. Let's try that again. Add controller. Question controller. Oh, I said plural. So question. And then the data context class. So I'll just, the first time you run this, you'll probably want to pick one. I'll just call it survey context. And keep in mind, you'll notice here that we actually list all the classes in there. And a lot of people ask me, well, why don't you just list the EF DB context or data context classes? And I always tell them, then this wouldn't play nice with others. So we don't know what kind of framework what kind of scaffolders you're putting in here. So we're going to show all the classes. Maybe in the future we can consider having custom filtering, but we didn't go that far with this release. Also, you can choose what type of view engines to generate, and then if you click Advanced Options, you can also specify some of the advanced view options that you would when you're adding a view. So I'll add this question controller. You can see here it's generating a lot of stuff. It's generating a questions controller, and it's generating the CRUD actions, create, read, update, delete, and it's generating all the views for that. And I'll show you those in a second. And let's generate one for the answer choices, if I can type here. Should build that. Add controller answer choices. And you notice here that after I compiled, it remembered what I chose last time and it defaulted to that, which is good. And what's interesting here is that it's actually scaffolding into an existing class now. So the second time I ran that scaffolding, You notice it added this new property. Since I'm not going to scaffold answers because I want users to answer, I don't want to have an admin interface for answering, I'm going to go ahead and add a DB set of answer as well for answers so that I can query that. So I can go ahead and change this file. And it's going to be okay when I scaffold the next thing. All right, so let's look at the controller real quick. You can see here that these controller actions are fairly simple. That's index, details, create, and the post. It's kind of a nice way to learn what the basics of doing EF code first is. And you might be thinking, well, why are you using the context directly? You should be using a repository with an interface and take that interface in dependency injection. And you can do that with the repository option. I'll show you this now, and if we have time, I'll show you how to do the other approach as well. Uh-oh, what did I hit? Okay, still works. So let's run this. Now I can go here and go to questions. If I can type questions. And we have a fully scaffolded site, so I can go in here and create new questions. I'll create two questions. And then we can go to answer choices and create answer choices for those questions. So, and you can see here that we didn't just put question ID in there and you type it in, right? We actually figured out these relationships between these objects and we gave you a drop down. So I can select, yeah, this answer is for how's the talk going? Great. And we can say, whoops. What is it? So. And then. Okay. I'm such a pessimist, right? Okay, and then what's the, yes, I don't even remember what the, really? Yes. No. Okay. So let's go back to the home controller here. And we're going to rewrite this. We're going to rewrite this action method to actually query the database now, rather than just faking up those questions. So first, we'll var survey context. I only type DB because it's short, not because I think it's accurate. And what we're going to do is var questions equals from. Question in db.questions. And I'm going to to list, or questions should be fine actually. Select new question view model. So remember, our view is still expecting a question view model. And I'll just map those things to the question. What is it? Oh, yeah, I need a link. Thank you. Using system. That link. So one of the things we have to do is we have to update our question view model because we neglected last time. Oops. I meant it F12 here. To add the answer choices. Collection. This one doesn't need to be virtual because this is just our view model. This has nothing to do with the database. Yep. Why isn't it telling me to prompt it? Okay. And then we can return dot to list. Share. I think I need a to list here too. Okay, so we go back to the home view. And now we can see that we're, well, we need to update the home view. Index. So let's get rid of the stuff that all this experimentation we did earlier. And what I'm going to do here is pull in a snippet here. And I'll walk you through the snippet in a second. But let's just make sure that, okay, so we can see now we have the survey, and we have the survey questions. If you recall, I'll go back to the home controller. What I want to do is I'm asking you all these survey questions. I want to post all of them to an action method. So let's write that action method, and then I'll walk you through the markup code. Because this will answer a question I get a lot, which is, how do you post a list of items to an action method and get validation working? And so that's what I'm going to do here. So we'll use index again. And this is going to take an iList of question view model. And we have to remember to use the HTTP post attribute here. And that way, when the initial request, the get request, will be handled by this version of the index method, but when you do a post back, it's going to get handled by this version of that. And when, like any good action method that accepts user input, the first thing we'll check if model state is valid. If model state dot is valid, actually, I think I might have a snippet for this. No, maybe not. Okay. If model state dot is valid, what are we going to do? Or if it's not valid, we'll just return the index view, the original view. But if it is valid, actually do need action result, don't I? If it is valid, we're going to want to save those records. So the first thing we'll do is we're going to take all these view models and put them into real objects, and then we're going to save those objects. So for each of our question in question view model, I'm going to create a new answer. And what we want is the answer choice ID from the question.answer choice ID. New answer. No, actually, so we're creating this, the question view model was a model of the question and the answer. So what we're creating is just the answers in the database. So answer choice ID equals. Oh, yeah, I do mean that. Thank you. And that would actually make that code work. Thank you very much. Yes, our answer equals. Okay. And then db.answers.addAnswer. And then the part that is very important not to forget, save changes. Oh, actually, let's put this one outside of that loop, because we don't need to call it. Oh, no, that one's inside, save changes is outside. And then we need to just return, redirect to action, and we'll just redirect to the index for now. So this is telling me that this question answer choice ID is a nullable int, so I just need to grab the value out of that. Yay, that compiles. Okay. So this code here is pretty straightforward. You submitted a bunch of survey question models, and I converted them into answers. I saved them on the database. I called save changes. So how did we make that work on the client side? Well, it's a little bit of gnarly code here, but it's not as bad as you think. Let's just separate this out a little bit. And one of the nice things is, try to imagine what this would look like in ASPX. It would be really awful. So we're looping through. So I should use that new helper I just wrote, right? But I didn't do that, because I wrote this before. But we're looping through all the models, all the questions. And I print out the question text. And then I'm using this hidden input for the ID of the question. So we want to bind this to a set of question view models. So this will bind to the ID. And then for each choice in the question, we're going to use the radio button for method. And we're going to pass in this funky expression here, m sub I of answer choice ID. And that's going to generate the proper syntax in the HTML form for sending multiple objects of the same type into an action method in such a way that we can understand it. So the only thing I'm missing here is I need to reference a couple new JavaScript libraries that are new to MVC 3. jQuery Validate, which is a third-party library. We didn't write that one. But we did write this other one called jQuery Validate Unobtrusive. And the way this works is jQuery Validate is a really cool library. It uses, it hooks in, it has a bunch of validation rules. But we wrote a jQuery plugin that looks at the type of attributes that our methods emit. So we emit these data attributes, or HTML5 data attributes. So when I hit F5 here and view source, if you've ever seen what our client validation looked like in MVC2, we had this big block of really ugly, gunky code at the bottom. And we try to convince you that it was OK. But now you can see that none of that ugly code is there. This is what you see is what you get right there. But what we do have is we have this metadata on all our inputs that tell that provide all the information. And that unobtrusive jQuery hooks into that and then validates all those fields, hooks it up to jQuery Validate. And the real nice benefit of that is that you get this real nice progressive enhancement experience. So if you don't have JavaScript enabled for whatever reason, the form will still work. You won't get these JavaScript, or if you, let's say you're trying to load jQuery validation from the CDN and it's not there or something like that, or the unobtrusive validation is not there, you're not going to get these JavaScript errors because if it loads and the jQuery value is not there, it's just not going to do anything. Whereas with the old thing, we were actually emitting inline JavaScript that was trying to execute and causing problems. So you notice here, let me make sure I compile this. If model state, not model, okay. Oh, so I'm trying to show validation at work and it's not working. Am I in the right script? Yeah. Home index, jQuery validate unobtrusive. Client validation should be enabled by default. Let's just go double check that. So you can see client validation enabled is true. Oh, yes, yes, you're right. So in the question view model, one of the things I forgot to do, I made that a nullable int, and I forgot to put the required attribute. So we support .NET 4 data annotation, so you can use string length, required, regex on your model. And what's great is, let's just do this without. Let me get rid of the JavaScript so you can see this working. This is the progressive enhancement experience. No, don't do that. Okay. So without JavaScript enabled, you can see that we get validation, and it works. But of course, the problem with that is that we had to do a full postback in order to show you that. But if I enable JavaScript client-side validation, we only set that required in one place. We set it on our server. But now that information is being sent to the client. And so although we set it in one place, we do get this client-side validation. So you can see. You can see here that when I select the right answer there, that error went away. Now, you see how this box is still highlighted? That's not our fault. That's jQuery validation. But I sent Jorn an email saying, can you fix this? And he said the same thing that I would say in this situation, which is, we are an open source project. Fork us on GitHub. Send a pull request. And we'll consider it. So I may just do that, or hope one of you guys do. Dave Ward, who's in the audience here, sent me a little bit of code that will fix that, which is one of the cool things about plugins like script libraries like jQuery Validate is that you can hook into all sorts of events there. And so we can hook into the validation event, and if we're lucky and this code still works, this is going to solve that problem. So let's try this out and just see. I do need to declare a script, type equals. I probably do. I just don't know what that one is. So all that's happening here, and let's make sure that form ID is correct, right? So no, not route values. Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah, no, I'm just trying to think, is there... Well, the problem is I think our form, I can't remember if our client validation actually puts metadata in the form tag that we might need for the validation. But what I can do is I can say index, controller name is home, and then one of these overloads is going to let me put the HTML attributes, right? Oh, I see what you're saying. It just registered. I know I'm slow, but... Wait, where? Okay. I don't know what I did there. Why did all that code go away? Okay. How'd that happen? Okay. Oh, I think... So let's try that again. So what I believe the gentleman in the audience was saying is we can just change the selector, Phil. Don't be an idiot. So instead of pound form, form. Wow. Okay, so let's... I don't know why I compiled that. That's a JavaScript change. But I love dynamic scripting languages. So now let's see what happens here. If I still didn't work. Let's try Control F5. Submit the query. OK, so maybe it doesn't work. But in principle, we could fix that without having to change jQuery validate itself. But I think it's time for me to put my money where my mouth is and submit a pull request for that. Okay, so great, we've got this survey question. In fact, I'm answering questions left and right. That's cool. How are we doing on time? Okay, we've got time. So great, I'm answering all these questions. So now I can pull you guys and find out what you think, except, oh, how do I look at all the answers? Yeah, we need a page that allows me to present all the answers that you've made. So back to home controller, and we're going to create a results page, public, action result, results, and we'll take in the ID, no, just results, okay. And in the return view, we need all the questions, so db.questions.toList. I'm doing toList because I wanted to evaluate that expression at that time rather than when the view's rendering, because otherwise, it's an expression. It's not actually calling the query until you actually try to iterate it or call toList on it. And we'll go ahead and add view here. And this time, I will choose the list view for question, not question view model, because this is where we're going to look at the actual results. What? I think I accidentally hit return before I meant to. My wife says I have really fat fingers, and this is why I keep messing up these type of demos. So list, question, we are good to go. And now we'll go to home controller, and we'll change this to redirect to results. So now when I submit this form, okay, well, we're not quite done yet. We need to show the results, right? I'm not showing all the counts. So why don't we do this? I'm going to generate an image here. Am I in the right view? Okay, good. Image source equals, I'm just going to call it /home/chart, and we'll give it the current question ID. Item. And this is one of the other new features of MVC3 that we don't show often enough is that we had all these really cool helpers for doing common things like creating charts and graphs and CAPTCHA even, stuff like that. So I just need to add an action method. We'll call it chart, takes in the question ID. And what we'll do here is we're going to create get the question from the database, db.question. Var question equals db.questions.find by ID. And then we're going to create a chart. So we'll say var chart. Let me zoom in, scroll down here. equals new, I think it's web chart. No, not web chart. It's probably just chart. I think everything we do is web this, web that. Okay, so we create a chart, and I can specify things like the width, the height, and the theme even. So we have these really cool themes. So I'm going to choose chartTheme.blue because it's my favorite color. And then we'll do things like add series. And you can add legends and add series. And I pretend like I know what that means, but I know what series are. Series is just the data that you want to chart, right? So we'll say the X chart type. And we'll use bar, like bar graphs. And then we'll say the X value is, and now we need to give all the possible X values. So in this case, I'm going to say question.answerChoices.select C for choice, such that, or as Scott calls it, Anders, C.answerText to array. So I believe these things take arrays, or at least that's the way I got it to work, and I didn't dig into it anymore. But question that, which would be weird to me, because it really ought to take an enum, which now that I'm saying it, telling you about it, I bet it does, but I didn't call toList on it or evaluate the expression, which is what you need to do. And so now we're going to look at answers.count.toArray. And then at the very end, we're going to call chart.writePNG. So it will specify the format. Now you notice here that I can actually change this action result to just be void. Any public method of a controller is going to be an action method. So if you have something where you're actually writing directly to the response, you can just make your action method void. What I would typically do is actually write maybe a chart result and actually return that. But these methods are the chart classes and methods. These new helper methods are actually shared between ASP.NET web pages and MVC. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to do a lot of sharing between our different products. So if you start off with Web Matrix and ASP.NET web pages and you start to want to graduate up to MVC, you can do that. Okay. So let's go take the survey again. Click Home. And we'll just answer the question again. And we can see there that now I got the survey and I got the survey results and I can actually tally them on the fly. So I'm ready to ask you guys these questions and have you answer them, but we need to do a couple more things. Well, I need to put this online so you can actually get to it and answer these questions. But I don't trust you guys. I don't want you adding your own questions or changing the existing questions and answers. So I need to do something to secure this. So what I'll do is I'll write an authorization filter. I'm going to start to go a little faster because I'm running a little bit out of time, and I know you're probably hungry and can't wait to get to dinner, but if you'll bear with me, I'll try to make this worth your while. So what we're going to have here is a, let's see, what am I calling this? This is going to be a require local attribute. So typically I would actually do real roles and membership and authentication, but what I wanted to show is how to write your own authorization filter. So authorize attribute, I believe. And also, this is kind of like poor man's authentication. So what this attribute is going to do is any action or controller you put it on, it's going to require that you're on the local host to edit that action or request that action or controller. That way, I can go ahead and hurry up and deploy this without having to build a whole membership system and associating them with questions and all that stuff in the middle of this talk, because I am running out of time. So let's do this. We'll require local. Override. Tap. Okay, I guess it's going to make me type this out. Protected, override. Why isn't it doing that? Bool, authorize, core. Oh, there we go. And then what I can do here is return httpContext.request.isLocal. Oops, no, not is Ajax, is local. Yes, you can only change it through Ajax. That would be pretty cool. So now I can take this attribute and I can apply it to everyone except the ones I want, but I'm lazy and I don't want to do that. What I really want to do is I would really like to use something like our global action filters. Global action filters are new in MVC 3. where you can add a filter to this collection of filters, and it will apply to every single action and controller. But that's not good enough for me, because I do want you to be able to answer the questions. I just don't want you to create your own. So what I need to do is I need to write my own filter provider called I'll call it the conditional filter provider, and I need to register that, and then that will actually be able to do anything I want in terms of getting filters. So it used to be in MVC 1 and 2 that we only looked at attributes to get action filters. And then in MVC 3, we added this global collection. But as part of that, we have this filter provider, provider. And what that does is that lets you register a filter provider, provider, which then registers filter providers. No, I'm just kidding. There's a scene in, if you've ever seen, what is this movie? There's a movie with Lou Diamond Phillips, and the guy has a trace buster. And it's a, you know, for busting traces. And then the guy, the big hit, that's right, the big hit. And then another guy's like, well, I got the trace buster buster. And he's like, well, I have the trace buster buster buster. I feel like some of our APIs are like that, where we have these factories and these factories, like the controller factory, and then the controller factory. So this is kind of like that, where we have filter providers here. And what I can do is I can write my own filter provider. This is where we get into some of the really cool, deep extensibility of ASP.NET MVC. So let me do this real quick. I'll just add a class. And we'll call it the conditional filter provider. And let's see, conditional filter provider. Oop. See, I already had a snippet for that because I knew I would run out of time. Now we need to import all of those lovely namespaces. So your own filter provider just implements iFilter provider. And what I'm doing here is in my constructor, I'm taking in an enumeration of func of controller context, comma action descriptor, comma object. So the basic idea here is that you can tell me all the condition, which is that func. And in that condition, you have access to the controller context and the action descriptor. And the action descriptor has all the information about the action. And then in my getFilters method, I'm going to run through all the conditions that you gave me. I'm going to run them against the current controller context and current action. And then I'm going to return all the ones, you know, all the filters that apply. So with this in place, I can go into global.asax.cs. And I can also register this using dependency injection. So unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to show that. But what I can do here is try to remember where I did this. OK, so var conditions equals new func of controller context, comma action descriptor. And notice that this part here is I have to do all this because this is the way I wrote that attribute. You can write your own that reads in from XML, from the database, or does whatever, you know, whatever it is you can think of, you can write one. So really wanted this to be very extensible. So object, I'm just going to new up an array of these things. And let's see, did I get that right? OK, good. And so I need a controller context and an action. And what I want to do is I want to say that if the action name equals controller descriptor dot controller name equals home, and we do want to go string comparison ordinal and nor case just to be on the safe side. I like to write safe code. If that's the case, we'll return null, meaning that we won't run this new filter, so we'll allow anything to home controller. Otherwise, we'll return a new handle error attribute. So require local attribute. Did I do that right? Okay. So. All right, thank you. So we're out of time. I have about 5 more minutes to finish this. If you're willing to stay for a little bit, all I need to do is figure out what I did wrong here. So this is a ternary expression that ends in... I don't think what you're doing is you're filling Delete these two? Oh, because I already have them right there. Yeah, okay. Thank you. And great. So I've registered that. I'm on localhost. So I should still be able to see everything. But now what I need to do is I need to publish this site to someplace that you can go and answer this question. So what I did is you might see all these offers for free hosting. So before this talk, I actually went and signed up for one. And so I'll use WebDeploy here. And then I can just type in my service URL, which is going to be publish.mycloudisawesome.net. That's their name, not mine. hacksurvey.mycloudisawesome.net. And we'll go ahead and leave the extra files, allow untrusted, philha@microsoft.com. Let's see, password. Let's go ahead and save that in case I got it wrong. So I published that site. And now we're pushing that into the web, and you'll be able to go visit hacksurvey.mycloudisawesome.net and answer the survey and see a graph of the results immediately when this is done. And of course, this was way faster right before, but while I'm doing that, I'm going to go to my blog because I want to show you that recently I did a blog post about NuGet, wanting to get feedback. And in here, I had this fancy schmancy survey, so you can see where I got the idea for this talk. And so people asked me, oh, what survey tool did you use? And I said, well, I wrote my own because I didn't like any of the other ones because they have limits, and I don't want any limits. So I don't know why this is taking so long. Oh. So I forgot one thing. There's this new feature in SP1 called, if you go to your project, right-click, add deployable dependencies. Can you see this? So you do need to select this because your hosting provider might not have MVC assemblies on their machine, right? Because MVC is not in the framework itself. It's a bin deployable. So you can check ASP.NET MVC, and since I'm using SQL Server Compact, I'll check that as well. Hit OK. And what that does is that adds this bin deployable assemblies folder. So you can check that into source control. And when you publish, anything in that folder is going to get published into the bin folder of your target app. So, no, I didn't. That's a good question. I don't want Razor because I'm not using ASP.NET web pages. What happens is when you select MVC, we pick everything you need for MVC. You'd only need Razor if you're using straight up like ASP.NET web pages with inline Razor. And that's not what we're using. So once again, I'll publish. Yes. This is like looking for Waldo here. Oh, there it is. So I'm going to publish again. And hopefully this time it's fat. Okay, I think what happened there is that maybe it's still trying to do it from the last time. But in any case, if it worked, Mike hacked survey.mycloudisawesome.net. So we see that it almost fully deployed it. The last 100 times I did this, it worked, but when I get in front of an audience where it's being recorded, it doesn't work. So let me try one more time, and if I don't get it right, I'll just publish it later, and then you can go in there, and you can tell me what you think. Oh, let's see. Publish. So allow untrusted, so I don't have a trusted certificate on mine. Hack survey, I know how to spell my name, mycloudisawesome.net, publish.mycloudisawesome, save the password, everything is fine. Let's try it one more time. Okay, this time it looks like it's going to work. So in the meanwhile, it failed. So there's been some flakiness, maybe it's because these guys are new offerings, but let's just switch back to, I'll publish it later, I promise you it works, and... So Real quickly, I covered all of these topics, Razor, multiple view engines, some of these I didn't get a chance to cover, but these are a lot of the new things that are new in MVC 3. And there are even more things in, this is what's new in the tools update, so pre-installed packages such as Modernizer, CodeFirst, continuing to ship open source, third-party open source products within MVC, and we'll continue that moving forward. And if you have any questions, you can go to our forums, you can go to Stack Overflow, and you can go to our website, and there's all kinds of release notes. And later tonight, please visit the site and tell me how the thing went. All right, thank you very much.